When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. The way that guitar riff comes in right at the end.
It's really good.
Amanda did that.
She did.
It's April 2nd. It's 1 o'clock, well into the month here on the East Coast. A little rainy out there. It's supposed to rain for a few days.
April showers.
Actually, you know what happened last night? There were some April showers last night in the form of the Iowa women's Hawkeye squad.
Raining
threes.
Caitlin Clark raining.
You know, I mentioned this on, and we're going to talk about the market.
We are going to do markets. Day. We'll do that.
But the coach of the LSU Lady Tigers, I put on Twitter,
I saw it.
If she spent as much time planning her defense of the Iowa women Hawkeyes team as she did planning her defense of the Washington Post article,
It didn't come out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have done better. I still think they would have lost.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
Nice rematch of last year's national championship.
It was a nice rematch.
This Caitlin Clark is just owning the cycle here.
She didn't even play that well last night.
Man, 41 points.
I've seen her play better. A lot of turnovers. You know, she's trying to do a little too much. I mean, when she steps across half court, she's in range, which is remarkable. Yeah. Anyway.
True that.
April 2nd, market call.
We're in it.
Yesterday, Carter was choking on like a chickpea. We've extracted
us.
That, so he'll be here today.
You gave him a little Heimlich?
You know, I did that to somebody once.
I'll bet you save lives.
No, I've
You save
my
lives?
Friend Richie Dem, who I've known Richie since I'm 5 years old.
He's choking on something.
He was choking on something, and he gave me the look, and I had a beer in my hand.
Yeah, of course you
Well,
did.
I put down my beer.
You said, hold my beer?
I Heimlich'd his ass, and then I
there
went back
go.
To... All to right. this day, he says, you
so
saved
we've been
my
saying,
life.
Guy, on the market call, I think for about like 10 trading days, we've been talking about how little is going on the stock index level. We've been talking about a lot of single stock movement. We've been talking a lot of macro, which to me kind of gets a little boring because we're like the stock market guys, we're the options guys. We like to kind of do the single names and some of the sector ETFs. Well, we're going to do a bit of that today.
Mm-hmm, so sure we are. Well, it's a day we're going to have some trades for you.
Yeah,
so stick around for that.
Yeah.
But let's throw the rundown up because watch this.
Bang. Look at that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
The new risk on. And we're going to have some slides to talk about what that is. I don't like using my name because if I say Guy's Gold Ketchup Trade Idea, yesterday, it's sort of odd.
Well, I can say it. So Guy's got a gold ketchup trade idea. We're going to detail that using the options.
What else are we going to do?
We're going to fade the financials. That would be Dan is going to fade the financial.
Third person.
Which, again, sounds kind of
weird.
And
then Carter's going to chart Alphabet.
Yeah, that comes
out. He would have done that yesterday, but for the chickpea.
But for. And you know what a butt for is?
I have no idea. So he's going to do it today.
We're going to do it all. All right, let's talk about this really quickly because I think this is interesting. The new risk on. Okay, so like right today, I mean, we've been talking about how the stock market had been making new highs seemingly every day, and the VIX doesn't get out of its own way, but gold kept on making new highs, new all-time highs. That is not an occurrence that I think most stock market participants like you and me have gotten familiar with over the last, call it, two or three decades.
No, historically, you know, listen, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but historically, as the dollar rises, as rates rise, gold does not do particularly well. Gold has done very well, obviously, under those circumstances, which I think is a bit of a tell. You know, that's just my view. A lot of people say you're nuts, telling you nothing. I think there's something going on. And we've been trying to bring that forth on a number of different shows in a number of different ways. Now it's starting to play out right before our very eyes. So the gold market is telling you something. I used this line yesterday. I'll use it again today. In the movie Jaws, remember at the beach?
Yep.
They want to open the beaches. They want to close the beaches. Yep. And the mayor said, listen, you say barracuda on a crowded beach, nobody bats an eye.
Yep.
You say shark and you got to panic. And it's the same thing. Bitcoin can go up. Things can go up. Gold goes up. That all of a sudden starts to wake people up. And I think that's what we're seeing now. So I think gold's just getting started. That's my view. We'll see how it plays.
Yeah, and
out.
I guess the point is like, what does it mean for what other risk assets? Well, and you know, we had this conversation yesterday, and our friend Doug Cass over there at Seabreeze, he sent us a nice little nifty chart talking mm-hmm. about another disconnect, right? This is between the stock market. You and I have been talking about this and rate cut expectations. And as rate cut expectations have fallen off, the stock market hasn't budged. At some point, there should be a bit of a reversion here, especially as you start seeing, let's just go to the 10-year yield. And we spent some time on this yesterday. We got to that 4.4 level. We pulled back a little bit from it, but that's a big move. So is today's reaction in the stock market, Guy, just down? Is it just down 1%, the S&P 500, the Russell 2000 small caps down 2% because yields are now pressing up at levels they have not been at in months?
I think it's part of it. I think the yield, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. You can say the market going down is driving yields higher, or yields going up is I think that's what's going on. You know, I don't think the market's prepared, and I've said this for a while, correctly, incorrectly, here we are today. I don't think the market's prepared for higher yields. And go back to that prior chart. It's like the stock market didn't get the memo. It, you know, if you look at this chart until basically January of this year, you know, these things were basically trading in parallel, or they're trading right along with each other. Yep. And then obviously the market kept going. Rate expectations started going lower. What gives on this one? I think I know what happens. But if you just look at it through this lens, obviously the market's got some catching up on the downside today.
Yeah, and then some one other area. I mean, you've been kind of pounding the table on crude oil. We've been talking about it since the high 60s a little bit. You said that basically the equities would probably play catch up a little bit at some point. Well, that's happened. So let's throw this up here, because this is basically the new risk on. When you look at this, so crude oil now, you have it at $85. You have
very
gold
quiet.
That we just talked
think about it real quick. I mean, all now people are starting to talk about it.
Yeah.
But this sort of stealth, almost daily move up in crude oil, nobody's really been paying attention to. And it's been happening for a number of different reasons, but here you go. And gasoline, which is obviously very important, but nobody talks about it, that's been on its horse as well, which is one of the reasons some of these refining stocks have done so well. Names like Valero and et cetera. Sorry, please continue.
Yeah, no, and I guess what this slide just kind of shows me here is that, okay, so we talked a little bit about China yesterday and those manufacturing data, and, you know, Biden and Xi had a call today. Treasury Secretary Yellen's going over there. I mean, listen, maybe it's all setting the stage for a more constructive, let's say, rest of the year as far as our relations with China. And again, you know, we have this tit for tat with the trade war and all this other stuff going on. I mean, I listen, and I know this is really sounds very political, but it might make a lot of sense. You know, the Biden administration has been tough on China, just as the prior administration has been. This might give them the opportunity to say, hey, listen, our economy is doing pretty well. Theirs is not doing well. Maybe there's a way that we can all participate in a better fashion, but that would be bullish for crude oil and in other industrial commodities.
Fair enough. And again, it's nothing political, but I think last year, excuse me, we sent four people. I think Gina Rometty went out there. I think Janet Yellen went out there. A couple other people whose names escaped. We sent four people over there. And in the aftermath, they all came back and said, very constructive. A week later, the Chinese did something to sort of upset that apple cart. So we'll see. I'm not that optimistic. But again, I've said it 100 times. You know, I'm prone to be pessimistic. So we'll see how this plays out. But it's interesting you brought that up. And you know, you were talking about something yesterday. You know, the Chinese seemingly have a pretty vested interest. I don't think they have a dog in the race in terms of the contender who's going to be president, but they clearly want to create some chaos around these elections.
Yeah, there was an article about them kind of sowing the seeds of kind of discontent on social media platforms, not too different than the allegations about what Russia was doing in 16 and maybe some other nations were doing in 2020. And again, if the question is, well, who do they want? They may not want anybody. They just may want just like a bunch of discord going on in our country, making their system look a bit more stable than ours. And I totally get that. Here's one thing that I think is also really interesting, this disconnect. Look at the way Bitcoin is acting today versus gold. Now, you and I have talked about it on Market Call on many occasions. When you look at the move that gold has had 13% or 14% or so in the last few months, you know, that is equal to like $1.5 trillion if you think about the market cap of gold. And then if you think about Bitcoin, at one point was up 80-90% in 2 or 3 months or so, you know, to about $1.5 trillion. So you think about it, there's more money, like a lot more money moving into gold. And this speaks to some of the things that you've been saying, Guy, about central banks buying. And again, you know, I know there's data in and around that. I don't know who buys Bitcoin. It could be rogue nations for all we know. It could be, Satoshi Nakamoto, like kind of leveling up a little bit on his position. Mm-hmm. What do you think? But at the end of the day, the capital committed towards gold, I think, is pretty fascinating.
It's interesting you say that, and I understand what you mean. Just in price alone, yeah, that appreciation, correct, suggests those are the amount of dollars that are flooding into it. But there's also the aspect or the possibility that in the absence of selling, you know, it just sort of lifts higher. It doesn't really take as much as you think to get the price higher. And when those dollars finally start moving in a meaningful way, one has to ask himself, who's the incremental seller here? Because I believe this, the central banks that bought it, they're not buying it to trade it. They're, yeah, buying it to hold it. So you have to see, it's going to get very interesting very quickly here in the gold market. That's sort of my two cents.
All right,
and I don't think, you know, you'd say, what do you mean going to get? Because it's been interesting. No, yeah, I think we're on the precipice of something really interesting happening, which is going to lead us to one of the first trades we're looking,
yeah,
at.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, you know, I'll just say this. We can throw that gold chart back up there again. You know, I think you and I are kind of on slightly different. I mean, you've been really right on this, and gold is something that I don't really understand and trade a whole heck of a lot of. And when I do, I usually do through ETFs and oftentimes using options on those ETFs. But like when I see that sort of move, like I probably want to pay for at least one pullback back to
that's
that
fair
flag that it made. And then maybe look at that 200-day moving average, or maybe that's the 150 right there, you know, like the way that's kind of smoothed out.
So I think it's a 200-day. No, and it's, yes, you're 100% right. But think about what you just said in terms of gold. And what have we been saying about the S&P forever in, yeah, terms of, you know, the inevitable pullback? We've been waiting for that, yeah, for a long time. So I guess my point is, I agree with you. But as we've seen in other instruments, you know, that standard deviations away can last a lot longer than one thinks. Anyway, sorry.
All right. Let's bring him in here. I mean, come on. It's Carter Braxton.
I'm kidding.
Upward chart.
Was it, Carter, you there?
Yeah. I'm here. Yeah, I literally was choking on a chickpea. It's tough to do something oral and verbal if you're
no doubt. I mean, listen, but I like the notion. I mean, the chickpea means that it was on top of some hummus for his lunch, or possibly it's something that he put on his sweet green salad. I don't know.
Something that was unsteak-like, let's say it that way, right?
I noted.
All right, fair enough. All right, Carter, help us out a little bit here. I know that you've taken a look at gold with us as we've been discussing it. Guy's had his reasons for wanting to be long of it. This move is he's been saying it's going to break out, and once it breaks out, there's probably activates more buyers, right, than profit takers, especially when you think about the folks or the institutions that are buying it. Thoughts here a little bit, and definitely we want to get into how to play for a catch-up if you're looking for other risk assets that may mirror this performance.
Sure. So generally speaking, it always and ever gets back to what one's time frame is, who one is in the market, knowing yourself. And so the person that states it's up from 2,000 ounce to, you know, 22, 23, up more than 10%, that's too fast, too quick. I want to short it. I play for 3 and 4 week trades. That's a very valid point of view. The person that is taking a longer term view and looking at a 5-year chart and saying gold has been mired in a range for almost 4 years and is just now getting going. Only now should I actually do some buying because the breakout is true and real and good and convincing. That person is equally on strong ground. So it's both. It's who you are in the market. I'm not a long-term buy and hold, if you will, player, 4 years, 10 years, nor am I playing for 2 and 3 week trades. So on an intermediate basis, which is 3 to 5 months, 3 to 8 months, 4 to 9 months, that kind of thing, I think this has room to run. Ultimately, as published so many times, 2550 is the price objective that we're working with for gold.
Let's look at your silver charts. You brought a few with you. I think you got a gold and silver relationship chart. You have a couple silver charts with some lines. Let's walk through these.
Yeah, so just to put this in context, this is a 5-year chart, and you see two lines, and you see two, of course, securities, two ETFs, one GLD for gold and one SLV for silver. It's not so important that they're the exact same thing here and now, or that their 5-year result or outcome is identical. It's the variability of the green line to the blue line, right? Silver is the high beta, win, lose, aggressive, just the way nat gas is versus oil. And so if one has a generally bullish view on precious metals and all things implied, then SLV, right, is the thing to do if one is aggressive. If one is more conservative, then it's GLD. But I like them both. We can look at actual SLV itself. And so we have the beginnings, and in many ways, that's it, of what should be a pretty good move from here. And let's toggle now, and we'll go back and forth. So we'll go out of toggle, back and forth, and what we have is a price objective. Now, does it have to stop right there at 28? No. Does it fall short of 28 and only make it to 27? Possible too. But I think the one thing that's clear is being short silver here would not be the right play.
Yeah. So, Guy, this is one that you kind of came to your attention again, as I think our listeners, our viewers know, you've been kind of pounding the table on gold here. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about silver. What are some of the, like, you know, just kind of some of the fundamental reasons why, aside from this technical setup, which looks really, really attractive, that is leading you to silver right now? And again, it sounded like you just said, I could see gold pull back and consolidate, but this silver, the SLV, could play a little catch up even as gold consolidates or pulls back a little bit.
Look at that. Look at that little slide we have. White guy likes silver. Well, gold's at an all-time high, okay? Yeah. We have established that. Silver, I believe the all-time high was early January. I think it was January 1st of 1979-ish. You may recall the Hunt brothers. I think COMEX silver traded north of $50. I think $50.35. You'd be like, okay, that was a long time ago. Yeah, it was. You know, you go back again. Let's just go back to sort of, I want to say, 2011 or so. I think it was the spring. I think we got close. My point in bringing that up is, as we've established, gold's at its all-time high. Silver's basically trading, even with the moves we've seen over the last couple of days, basically half of the prior all-time high that it made. So as you can see, silver's trading at a 50% discount to its prior high. At some point, I do believe the catch-up trade is going to start, and I think we're starting to see it now. And I think the other point is the industrial and technology demand, it's completely underappreciated by the street. I mean, there is still an industrial use for silver, and there's still a technological use for silver in all the things that we talk about on our shows on Fast Money and CNBC every day. Gold is a commodity in name only. There's really no end use outside of jewelry. Mm-hmm. Silver is an industrial metal that still has uses, and at some point, I think the market's going to start to pick up on it. For those three reasons, yeah, I'm as bullish I am as gold, I am equally bullish now of silver.
Right. And when we think about how to kind of maybe time this trade, I think Carter really laid it out, who you are in the market, what are your time frames, that sort of thing. We are obviously a bit more short-term oriented on the trading front here. And when I listen to the reasons why you want to take a look at SLV and the technical setup that Carter sees, I say to myself, this looks kind of interesting to kind of play with defined risk using options. I kind of, what do I like to do? I like to target events here. So we know that there is a May 1st Fed meeting, and then we have a June, I think it's 12th Fed meeting here. So I want to look at June expiration. I want to give myself some time for this to play out. Quickly, just, you know, when I look at the price of options, let's kind of flip to implied volatility here. This one, you know, sets up kind of interesting for me. Looks kind of cheap-ish, if you will. So I want to buy a call spread. I want to look at the June 24, 26 call spread, paying about 55 cents for that, buying one of the June 24 calls at about $1.10 to open, selling one of the June 26 calls about 55 cents. Okay, that cost me about 55 cents. I break even at 24.55. So that is the strike of the call that I am buying plus the premium that I'm paying. I can make up to $1.45 between 24.55 and 26 with a max gain above that. I have losses up to 55 cents between 24 and 24.55 with a max loss below that. Here's the way I'm thinking about the risk reward here. I'm risking 2.3% of the ETF price. I have a break even up less than 4%. And if the ETF is up 10% in 2.5 months, I have nearly a 3-to-1 potential payout. I just like the risk reward here. And again, if you thought that this thing could make a straight shot much higher above 26, you would not be doing a call spread. You would just be buying a call. I just think paying $1.10 for a 24 strike at 2.5 seems like a lot to me right now. That's why I'm comfortable near term playing for a $2 wide.
You give yourself some time without question. It's about, you know, 2.8 to 1 in terms of risk reward, which I think sets up well. I think you typically want to be worst case sort of a 2-to-1 in your favor in terms of risk reward. This gets you close to 2.8-to-1. It makes a lot of sense. So I like the trade. I like the duration. And I think we're going to know, this is again my opinion, very quickly if you're going to be writing this thing or not, Dan.
Yeah. And again, so to me, it just, you know, nearly a 3-to-1 payout. I got a lot of time to play. And I look at Carter's charts and I said, 26 should not be hard. If some of the things that you think is going to play out in the macro landscape, then that looks like a pretty decent risk reward here. All right, really quickly, we are going to be getting into earnings season here, Guy. But first things first, trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
As we said about earnings, one of the things that I find most fascinating, and again, I did the options action program on CNBC's for 10 years, and I did it with Carter for many of those years. And one of the reasons that earnings season is so interesting to me and the overlap with the potential to define your risk into potentially binary events or hedge portfolios or hedge single names is that, you know, you have this expected movement. You know, the market type tries to kind of get in front of some of that sort of stuff here. So when I think about this first group that's going to set to report, this is late next week. So this is on Friday, April 12th. We have JP Morgan. We have Wells Fargo. We have Citi. And then the following week, we have some of those investment banks, Goldman and Morgan, plus Bank of America. I say to myself, okay, let's look at an ETF that tracks that group. We know that the XLF is not perfect here. We know that the largest weighting in the XLF is Berkshire Hathaway, which obviously has a whole heck of a lot of exposure in and around the insurance space. But it also has a lot of those big money centers. Look at the move that that ETF has had. And we'll let Carter take a look at that. I just see this thing. It's been kind of just kind of grinding a little higher, yeah, holding on to that uptrend. It's kind of testing it a little bit here. And I say to myself, I got lots of catalysts. I got a market that looks a little overdone. I got rates that are going higher. And I got to tell you, Guy, a year ago when rates were going higher, the big concern was that money centers and regionals were going to have problems with their kind of held to maturity, mark to market portfolios of treasuries and the like here. And so, again, we saw banks fail because of that. If I look at a 5-year of the XLF, I'm back to a level here that looks kind of troublesome to me, okay? Especially if I think things are about to get a bit more volatile in the broad market. And then I look at the underlying volatility, the price of options in the XLF. Here it is, 30-day at the money implied vol. That's a 2-year chart of that. It's pretty cheap here for those looking to make long, you know, a long premium directional sort of plays here. So I want to look at April expiration. That's the 19th. It's going to capture most of those large bank earnings. I just want to buy a put here. I just want to buy the 43 put when it's trading at 43.65 or so here. It cost me 43 cents, about 1% of the underlying here. And what's interesting to me about this, I have a lot of optionality, Guy, here. You know, if the thing starts going in my direction, I can basically look to sell a downside put, turn it into a spread, or I can kind of roll it down. And we're going to talk a little bit more about rolling down. So I just want to go over this again here. So today the XLF was trading 41.65, the April 19th put, the 41 and a half strike put. So they have half dollar strike puts here, cost me 43 cents. That breaks even at 41.07. Okay. So down basically a couple percent here. And I basically have, you know, profits down to, I don't know, where do you think this can go? 39
well,
and a half?
I think you're probably going to go lower than that. And here's the reason why I think so. So if you think about the construct of the XLF, 13.5% of it is Berkshire Hathaway. Just remember that for a second. Yep. Obviously, JP Morgan is 10%, then Master and Visa card between the two of them are about 15%. So that's the lion's share of this ETF. Why do I mention Berkshire Hathaway? Because obviously one of their largest holdings is Apple. Think about what Apple, the stock, has done. So in a lot of ways, as counterintuitive as this sounds, the worse Apple does, the more likely you are going to be right in this thing. So again, I don't love the construct of the XLF, but it's got nothing to do with what I like or don't like. you trade what's in there. But I think this trade, again, with that trend line, this was another one where you're going to know very quickly.
Yeah, Carter, tell us what you're seeing here with the XLF into these bank earnings over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as you point out, it's an imperfect if one's trying to capture the bank trade. There's KBW Bank Index, but there's an ETF, KBWB. But either way, what we know is this sector, from its low to its present position, the 5.5, almost 6 month advance that is not only for the sector, but for the S&P. This sector is up 34, almost 35% versus the S&P up 28. And it has come a long way. And so, yes, I like the trade. I like the idea of certainly being bearish here. And it's just a question of whether one gets enough of a drawdown to make it profitable. But that's the bet.
Yeah. So again, you know, with 41.65 here, you see how far we've come. If you look at just the April 19th, 41.5 strike put cost you 43 cents, breaks even down at 41.07 there. So again, it's a little more than 1%. I just like the risk reward here. And like all long premium directional trade ideas, I'm going to look to cut my losses at 50% of the premium spent here. But again, this gives me a couple weeks. So I like the catalyst. I like the way the market's acting here and I like the setup. All right, Carter, last week, or 2 weeks ago, it was March 19th, Guy and I laid out a bullish fundamental case for Google, for the Alphabet. It'd been lagging many of these generative AI peers. We were looking at a May call spread. Guy likes to use this expression, and I love it because it's a great momentum trading strategy of buying the breakout. We were talking about how the NASDAQ 100 making new highs every day. Some of these Gen AI names were just going ballistic, and the sentiment was really poor against Google. So we did, you know, we just basically laid out the 155-170 call spread in May. Well, here we are. The stock's appreciated. It's filled in some of that gap from its earnings. It's kind of stuck in and around its prior all-time high. Talk to us about what you're seeing in the charts here. And then Guy and I kind of want to update our thesis on the name and kind of roll this trade up and out a little bit.
Yeah, so Google had been a big laggard to its other sort of super cap magnificent peers. And at this point, it's moved a lot. But the question is, does it ultimately make a new high? Right, so many securities in the market are well above their own respective late 2021, early 2022 highs, and Google is not. And I think ultimately one has to have that view. So let's put the lines in that would make that case. The symmetry is very clear. Returning to a level is an inherently difficult thing. You typically back and fill, but ultimately in time, up and out. And so can annotate it another way. A lot of people like to name their patterns. These are not important, the names. It's what a setup is for a presumptive move higher. And so it does get down to, is one buying Google? Is one selling Google? Or is one saying, I'm not interested in either one? I think of the three, buying Google is the one to embrace. All right.
So let's keep that chart up for a second, or put up our real-time chart. And you'll see the first high we made in Google, Dan, was probably back in, like many of these stocks, yep, in November of 2021. You saw the subsequent sell-off. Then in January, I believe, of this year, we traded up and made a similar high. We spent January, February, and part of March selling off. So it appeared as though we had a textbook double top. Remember this for a second. Amanda, real quickly, pull up an SMH chart of the same duration. There's a reason why I want to show this. Again, a lot of this becomes pattern recognition. I'm not suggesting Google is a semi-stock. That's not my point at all. But you'll see this. Now, look at those prior highs in the SMH. We mentioned this 165 level. We traded up to it. We failed. And then for the next couple months, we spent the time going lower in the SMH until you got back to those prior highs. And then obviously you saw the explosion higher. Again, I'm not suggesting you're going to see a similar move in Google, but the technical setup is extraordinarily similar. So we're back up at those levels. Obviously, you have the broader market working against you right now, but somewhat counterintuitively, if some of these high-flying tech stocks start to give it up, I think you're going to see money flows into names like Google where you could at least rationalize the valuation, Dan.
Well, the valuation is rationalized right now here. And I think, to your point, Guy, it sets up for a breakout with the slightest bit of decent fundamental news. I mean, right now, expected EPS growth this year of 22%, trading about 22 times. Next year, expected EPS growth of 15%, trading just below 20 times, with kind of low teen sort of expected sales growth, and that's accelerating. So to me, the valuation story is there. The sentiment's really bad. A couple of weeks ago, there was there were rumors out. It was reported that Apple is talking to Alphabet to license their generative AI model, which would be Gemini. They're probably going to do this before Worldwide Developers Forum. So to me, this all sets up kind of interesting. The fact that it's kind of, you know, made that brief new high back and filling a little bit kind of sets up the potential to do a roll of this trade idea. So back on March 19th, we were looking at the May 150-170 call spread. That's when the stock was about 146 or so. So here we are now. We've had this roof up to 153. It was trading at 155 yesterday. I want to roll this up and out. So right now, that call spread in March that cost $5 is probably like 730 or so. So you have nearly a 45% or so profit in that trade idea. Now I want to give myself a little more time. I want to go out to June because I want to capture Worldwide Developers Forum. Maybe we get an announcement right before that. We're also going to get their earnings announcement. So I want to sell the May 150-170 call spread to close, and I want to take that profit. And then I want to buy a June call spread. So here's what I want to do. I want to buy the June 155-175 call spread. That costs about $6. Okay. So I'm buying one of the June 155 calls at about 850, and I'm selling one of the June 175 calls at 250. Cost me six, breaks even at 161. I can make profits of up to $14 between 161 and 175 with a max gain above that. And then I'm only risking those $6. But again, I'm going to stick to that mental stop of 50% of the premium that I spent. I'm also working with some profits from the prior trade. And now I have more time to kind of encompass a bunch more of those catalysts that I'm looking out to. So Guy, thoughts on that?
It's losing. I mean, it's not leverage in the sense of leverage, but what you're doing is you're taking a winning trade and then formulating it into another potential winning trade. And obviously the payout here is going to be, I think, potentially significantly more. So you're using the strength of the existing trade to your benefit, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, there were people out there that say sort of the Las Vegas check change, you're out, but you know, this is a way to sort of lever those gains you already have. I think it makes, especially if you believe the technicals are setting up the way they are, this makes a lot of sense.
All right, Carter, before we get out of here, I got one question for you. Is it safe to say that you probably looked at millions and millions of charts?
How
over
is that
your
possible?
Career? How many charts? Have you ever gotten this question? Like, you know, some people will say, how many free throws or how many three pointers has Steph Curry tried to do? You know what I mean? In his lifetime,
practicing
games, all that sort of stuff. It's probably hundreds of thousands, billions,
hundreds of thousands. Yeah, something like that.
How many charts do you think you looked at, Carter?
Hard to know, but I can tell you my routine. I mean, I first thing in the morning around six, I look at the futures, I look at the currencies and so forth. But then I go through every stock in the S&P 500, and I do it again at midday. I do it again at the end of the day. And at night, I look at the constituents in other aggregates, sometimes every stock in the Russell 2000, or I look at every SMH stock just to zero in on one area, or every stock in the GDX. And so it's really, there is no number. It's like counting
grains there is a number.
And at the beach.
Well, you said you do the S&P 500 in the morning, 2000. And then in the afternoon, and then again, that's 1,500.
Let's get one of our
and then the Russell 2000, that's 3,500. Then a 10.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a machine.
You're a machine. You're the Steph Curry of charting. All right, I'm going to throw a chart up here. I think in the history of the stock market, this might be the ugliest stock chart I have ever seen. Those are my annotations, not yours. What do you think here, pal? I know this is one.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, right. So if one were to look out over the past 5 years, there are only two things that have had such an exceptional run that they stand above all others, and everyone knows what they are. It is this stock and Bitcoin, right? NVIDIA is nothing like this. And so you're talking about zero to 400, and Bitcoin is even more extreme. And so the question is, do great runs like this, and at some point they do, and then how much do you give back? And we often can rely on formations or setups to project that. Now, of course, this projects back to zero, but that is not going to happen.
I mean,
the real question is, right, what is this, and this part is not about charts, what is this enterprise worth? If one can know such a thing or even project or guess 5 and 10 years out. And a lot of people spend a lot of time doing work like that, all the charging stations or God knows what. But the point is, there is some point at which you have a decent value. My hunch is not much below 100, if even that. I would say that's kind of what we're looking at. And ultimately, thoughts of this going to 50 or 10 or zero, completing the formation, the head and shoulders, that's not reasonable. So call it 90 to 100 would be my guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you'll say we beat up on Tesla. Well, the reality of the situation is if you didn't know it was Tesla and just looked at it, you'd be like, this does not look good. And this is a stock, obviously, that made its all-time high, like, again, like many things we talk about, in the fall of 2021. And the stock is now roughly 60%, maybe even more than that, I have to do the math, from its all-time high on a broader market that's done extraordinarily well until the last couple of days. So clearly there's a problem. And the delivery number was a disaster. I mean, I think at one point this expected delivery number was almost 500,000, and it came in at what, 385,000 or thereabouts. So not good. A demand problem, on top of which they've been cutting prices as well, which, what does that mean? It means they're going to have a margin problem as well, which 3 quarters ago we thought, which I didn't think so, and I'm not being a big shot because I said it, you know, that was supposedly going to be trough margins for Tesla, and we're going to see a reacceleration. We're not going to see that.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing I'll just say is that I love that you just said, okay, maybe we get to 100 or something like that. And that was that kind of panic low at the end of 2022, right? And so when it fell off a cliff, it literally went from 200 to 100, I think in like 6 weeks. I mean, I had never seen anything like that, especially where it had just come from above $400, let's say a year ago, right? So I'm with you. It's not a great press on the short side here, people. I think the most important point, and one of the reasons why we've really stuck with this name and talked about it the way we have, is really talking about market narratives and talking about participants in the market, people like Elon Musk and the sort of people that follow what he had to say. Somebody sent me a video for the last 10 years of Elon Musk sitting down on camera with a mic in his face being asked about full self-driving. And every year going back to 2014, he said, we should be there next year. And then in 15, we should be there next year. And then in 16, I mean, again and again and again. If this was, I mean, like any other CEO, they would have been gone long, long ago. Okay. But so I guess my only point is like there are other stories in the market that captivate a lot of interest the way this has. And this is an important reminder that just like they go one way, like to the moon, they often go the other way too, and they will likely overshoot. So that's my 2 cents there, Carter. Just thoughts. I mean, listen. So 150, it probably finds a little support here in the near term.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, I think one can anticipate as low as 90, 100, but more than that, unlikely.
Yeah.
Well, this was a jam-packed show.
We cover a lot of ground.
Carter's back, which we love. And we updated a couple things. We gave you some trades. So there's a lot to do here. We'll continue to update trades. I want to thank, obviously, our sponsors. Thank you, Fidelity. Obviously, always thank you to FactSet. Tomorrow is Wednesday.
Liz Young.
EY from SoFi. She might physically be here.
She's going
to
be.
And on Wednesdays, we'll take questions, as is our want to do.
Yeah, it is.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're going to do it.
And by then, you will know if the Mets are now 0-5 or 1-4, assuming they play tonight out there at Shea. Yankees obviously won again last night. They started off the season 5-0. I think the first time since the early 90s, Dan, if you care.
Pretty good.
Dan was at Madison Square. So this was Dan Nathan's day yesterday. A lot of work here at the Risk Reversal offices.
Yeah.
A lot of studio work. I mean, podcast shows.
Yeah.
Then you did CNBC's Fast Money at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Then you went to the Madison Square to watch the Rangers lose to the Penguins of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby, the best player on the ice last night. But they're playing for their playoff lives. Yeah. And then you walked the 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Or maybe you took a car. I don't know.
A car.
And you did Stephanie Ruhle's show at 11.
I did.
That's a long-ass day.
Hour. We started. I did a 9 a.m. pod with Liz Young yesterday. Yeah. And I got home at
Big
midnight.
Day.
How about that? All right. Well and now we're doing it here with Carter. Thanks for the shout-out. Carter, thanks, bud. We'll see
all right,
you soon. All right, man. That was fun. We covered a lot of ground. Hey, be sure all of these charts, all of these trade breakdowns, we put them all, we call them our show notes. And you can have that in your inbox. Go to riskreversal.com and sign up for it. So I think on days that we do the trade ideas, they come right there in your inbox. And then every day at 4 o'clock, we have a little rundown of the content that we had here.
Listen, you can make fun of them, but it's for free. And we're also on the gram. We put out what we're looking at on the gram.
Follow Guy Adami at Guy.Adami.
Yeah, I'm not great on it, but I'm trying.
You're trying. Yeah. I'm Dan S. Nathan, and we are at Risk Reversal Media. And then you can see all those handles there, people.
And our YouTube page.
Yeah,
I'm sure most of these folks have already subscribed.
They're there right now watching it on the YouTube.
No, but they might not have subscribed yet.
Subscribe.
You got to subscribe to the YouTube. You got to smash that subscribe button.
Look at this. We got the little thing over here. It's pretty cool.
Boss.
Yeah.
We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. See you, everyone. Thanks.